Okay, so we are in the unfortunate position of needing to complete a topic that we began, it's 3 weeks at this point, I think, two or three weeks ago. So that requires a little bit of review. And this discussion began when we noted a problem, an apparent problem, between two positions taken by the Rambam. Position number one was that in the event that a Jew is forced to do something inappropriate, something that he wasn't supposed to do, and something which he wasn't supposed to do even under duress, one of the big three. So the Rambam's position was, we will not lash him, we will not punish him for what he did wrong, even though he made the wrong decision, because he ought to have... resisted the temptation. Nonetheless, he's not going to be punished. That's on the one side. On the other side, and this is sources Bet and Gimel on the sheet here, if you want to take a look at that the sheet, you can see it there. On the other hand, you don't have to. I'm just telling you that that's where you can find it. But on the other hand, the Rambam wrote that in the event that a person's life is in danger, and he needs to eat a certain food because the doctor tells him that's what's going to cure him, and that food or that therapy is going to involve one of the big three prohibitions. So for example, really the only example I can come up with, he needs to make use of a relic from some idol in a temple in order to heal himself. That's what the doctor tells him, because that may have been the state of medicine a couple of thousand years ago. Then if he does that in order to save his life, which was inappropriate, then the court is going to punish him. So what we didn't understand is that both are cases of compulsion, right? In the first case, he is compelled by an aggressor, and we said that he wasn't supposed to give in, but if he did, we're not going to punish him. In the second case, he was compelled by an illness, and he wasn't supposed to give in, and if he gives in, then we are going to punish him. So we asked, what's the difference between the two cases? And the Or Sameach, or Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, offered the very interesting distinction that when you are compelled by somebody else, it's the other person's will that is involved. It's the will of the aggressor. It's not your will. You don't want to do it. The other person wants you to do it, and you are simply their tool. Whereas, in the event that somebody is ill and does something in order to cure the illness, it's their own will involved. Granted that they don't want to be in this situation altogether. They'd be very happy if this had never happened. But fundamentally, the desire for them to eat the food they shouldn't eat or engage in the therapy they shouldn't engage in was their decision. And therefore, they're going to be punished for doing so. You follow the distinction? This is all what we saw weeks ago. This is old hat. But what I wanted to show now, and what the Nishmas Avram here is going to demonstrate for us, is a similar concept elsewhere. If you take a look at the sheet before we even get to the sheet that says Tough You'd Bet, if you take a look at this sheet first, this one. So take a look at source Dalet, please. Okay, Aleph, Bet, and Gimel are all summaries, are all material from last week. But now you want to see source Dalet. This is from the Shulchan Aruch regarding the issue of reciting a bracha on food, the blessing we recite. So he says, Kol ha'ochlin v'hamashkin sha'adam ochel v'shosel l'refuah. Any food or drink that a person consumes for the sake of healing, the person eats a therapeutic food. Im tamam tov ve'achich nehne mehem. If the taste is good and the palate benefits from them, mevarich aleihem tchila v'sof. Then you make a bracha in the beginning and the end. Even though you're eating it as medicine, you also enjoy it. So if my doctor is so kind as to say to me that a hamburger is just what the doctor ordered for me, so I'll make a bracha, even though it's therapeutic. My hamburger is medicine, nonetheless. That's the Shulchan Aruch. Then, where it says Hagah, Rabbi Moshe Isserles adds something. He says, "Im ansuhu le'echol o lishtos." If a person was compelled to eat or drink, afal gav, not for medicine, not for medical purposes, but someone said, "Eat that," and he pointed a gun. So afal gav dehachech nehenem imenu eino mevarech alav. Then, even though the person benefits from it, he enjoys the food, there is no bracha. Why? Because you were forced. No bracha, no blessing. Achal, and then the next note from the Shulchan Aruch. Achal machal o mashke shel iser b'pnei asakana. If a person is dangerously ill, and I added in brackets the Mishnah Berurah's note, it's choli, is the danger. A person is dangerously ill and he eats something that he was prohibited from eating. Mevarech alav t'chila v'sof. Then you do recite a bracha. So to make sure this is clear, because we saw three separate statements. Number one, food or drink that you eat, that you consume, for medical gain, if you enjoy it also, if it's also a food, you're going to make a bracha. That's number one. That has nothing to do with prohibitions. It's entirely permitted to consume this. There's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. Item number two, if someone compels you to eat something, and it's a food that's 100% permissible, there's no prohibition, there's no isur involved. It's a food that is 100% permissible. Then, even though you enjoy it, you don't recite a bracha on it. No bracha. And then the third rule that we saw is that if it's something you're not allowed to eat, but you're eating it because you're in danger, then you do make a bracha. So how do I make sense of the rule? How do I distill these three lines into a reasonable rule that I can then apply to any case that will explain when you make a bracha and when you don't? Yes.
In the second one, it's not about health, though, right? It's just if someone compels you to eat it.
Correct. Don't give it to anybody. Correct. Health is a factor only in the first and third lines, not in the second.
Or third, health, I guess, not sickness, but
well, no, but that's why I added in brackets. The Mishnah Berurah there says it's an illness case. So what sort of a rule can I formulate? To try to group this a little more clearly, what we're saying is, you make a bracha in the following two circumstances. Number one, where it's medicinal, but you also enjoy it. And number two, where it is medicinal, even though it's prohibited, that's a separate point, but where it is medicinal, and it happens to be prohibited. I think that the third line is supposed to be consistent with the first, that you're still only saying the bracha if you benefit from it. Remember, this is the tricky part about reading the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, written by Rabbi Yosef Karo, is in lines 1 and 3 in Source Dalet. They're both Rabbi Karo speaking. It's two consecutive lines. The line in the middle is interpolated by Rabbi Moshe Isserles. So you have to read the first and third lines as one running right into the next. And if so, the rule is going to be consistent, that both line 1 and line 3 are talking about where you do enjoy the item. So what he's telling you, what the Mechaber by Yosef Karo is telling you is, if you enjoy it, then even though you are eating it for medicinal purposes, nonetheless, you're going to make a bracha. What Rabbi Moshe Isserles is adding is, if you're eating it only because somebody forced you to, then you don't make a bracha. You don't make a blessing. Got it? That's what they're saying. And now we're going to see the reason for it. Take a look, please, at source number Hey, letter Hey. The Mishnah Berurah, right, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, author of the Chafetz Chaim, explains. He says, even though the palate enjoys the item, he's commenting on the middle line that we saw in source Dalet. He says, "V'lo dami l'mashakasav l'kamei b'siiv tes ba'ochel iser mibnei asakana d'mevarech alav." He says the line regarding the person who is compelled to eat is not the same as the line regarding the person who eats it because of illness. Kevanda kopanim nehena. After gam sham achilaso ayde ones shani hasam de ones eno ala achila gufa. The key line, he says, is that even though you are enjoying the food or benefiting from the food in all of these cases, in the case that you in the second line you don't recite a bracha, because the compulsion is not regarding the eating per se. In the third line, the compulsion is not on the eating per se. It's being in a situation of being sick. That's the compulsion. You decide to eat in order to exit that situation. Masha ein kein, as opposed to hacha in our case, sha'achila gufa hu al yidei ones. You are actually compelled into the act of eating. Sha'on sim oso lo'ochlo, they force him to eat it. Lo shayach bazeh l'chayvo l'varech al hana aso kem and shu ba'al karcho. It doesn't make any sense to obligate him to recite a bracha. The whole thing is against his will. In other words, what the Mishnah Berurah explains is the same concept that the Or Sameach applied regarding saving one's life. He says, when a person is compelled to engage in the act of eating, that's not called an act of eating. When someone holds a gun to his head and says, chew and swallow, he's not eating, as far as we are concerned in the eyes of Jewish law. As opposed to a case where a person is in a situation in which, it's true, eating is going to help him, but no one's forcing him to do it, it's his decision to do that, then it is called an act of eating. And what that translates into for our discussion is that we're going to make this broader and apply it in the case of having to violate one of the laws in order to save one's life. And what we're going to say is, where someone forces you to do something, it's as though you didn't do it. Even if you weren't supposed to go along with it, nonetheless, it's as though you didn't do it. Where you choose to do something in order to get out of a danger, that's a different story. That we view differently. Is that clear? Okay, I realize that it was weeks ago that we actually discussed this, so this is hard to do, but that's life. Okay, so that's the distinction that he makes. And now, we'll look at the sheet that says Taf Yud Bet at the top. Adina, do you have one?
Yes.
Okay, great. We are in the second column on page Taf Yud Bet, where the paragraph breaks, V'samachti Me'od. You see that? He says, V'samachti Me'od. This is now the Nishmas Avram talking. And he says, I was very happy. Kishara'isi Achrechein. Mashakasav Hagan Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal. I was very happy when I saw what Rosh Shlomo Zalman wrote on this issue as well. V'zeh Lashono. And this is what he wrote on this problem of distinguishing between an act someone engages in because he's forced to, and an act someone engages in by his own decision in order to escape harm. Ach bi'ikar ha'asaga shel ha'magin Avram. He says, regarding the line of the Magin Avram, who asks what the distinction is between doing something because someone forced me to and doing something because I chose to do it to avoid a bad situation. Ra'isi b'mishnah berurah. He says, I saw the Mishnah Berurah. That's what we just saw in source Hay. D'mechalek chiluk yafeh. He made a fine distinction. D'lo dami la'ochel iser ibnei asakana. It's not comparable to eating a prohibited food because of danger. D'sha'ani hasam. That case is different. Sha'ones einenu ala achila gufa. Because you're not being forced to eat. This is all we saw in the Mishnah Berurah. Mashein kein hacha. As opposed to this case, the case where you choose to eat, let's say to cure an illness. Sha'achila. I'm sorry. As opposed to the case in which you eat because the person says eat, and he points a gun. Sha'achila gufa hi al yidei ones. The eating itself is compelled. Sha'on simos olechol, they force him to eat. Ulekach ein mechayven oso bazel avarechal hahana'a. Therefore, we don't make him recite a bracha on it. However, onusu agufa achila, because he was forced to eat. The Nira Lefiani is daiti, and he says, in my humble opinion, it is possible litain dugma l'nechona lazet, to give an example for this, and then he goes into an additional piece that supports this. I'm just weighing back and forth whether it makes sense for us to go through this part, or whether I want to skip to what we're going to see next, because I'm dealing here with an old issue, and we're not going to cover the new issue, and then we have another few weeks after Pesach before the next time we meet. So, on balance, I think it's wise. Discretion is the better part of valor. I think it's wise to jump to our new topic. We've made the point about this one. We hit the key message. The rest of the Nishmas Avram on this is fascinating, and we're going to skip it. If you want to go read it at some point and ask me questions about it, I will be glad to discuss. But now I can give you page Taf Yud Gimel, or did I already give it to you? We're jumping to page Taf Yud Gimel. Adina, do you have that? Okay. The number two. He now moves on to a new point. And the new point relates to the halacha that we've been building on all along. Right? We started this discussion, this section in the Nishmas Avram, by commenting on the line in the Shulchan Aruch which said that if somebody is dangerously ill, it is a mitzvah to violate Shabbos for that person. However, he now wants to define what sort of medicine warrants violating Shabbos for this person. And the term he uses, and we'll see why in a moment, is rifu'ah yidu'ah. It has to be a known cure. A known cure. Now, what in the world is a known cure? Well, person has strep throat. I think it's true that barring allergies and barring unique circumstances, generally speaking, you're going to prescribe penicillin. Is that roughly correct? Okay. Is that 100% going to be a cure? There's no such thing as 100% as far as I'm aware. So it's clear, I think we're going to call it a known cure, even though it doesn't reach the 100% threshold. How certain does it need to be? 66%? 50%? 20%? Do we perhaps weigh cost-benefit? There's a certain risk in taking a particular medicine, or in maybe not in taking medicine. Maybe there's a certain risk in not treating the patient. And this medicine is certain enough that it'll override that risk, and therefore that's the treatment that we give. Right? How do I gauge a known cure? What does a known cure mean? Such that we're going to violate Shabbos for this person. Keeping in mind, we have already said multiple times that if you're in doubt regarding saving a life, you act to save the life. So I'm not even sure why we need it to be a known cure. Maybe the answer is, do whatever comes to hand and hope it works. Throw a whole bunch of things against the wall and hope something sticks. Why is it that we're insisting on a known cure at all? You follow the question? So let's see where he got this idea from. The answer seems to be, he got it from a comment in the Magen Avram, Rabbi Avram Gambiner, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. And here I'm going to refer you, before we see the part on Taf Yud Gimel, I'm going to refer you again to the side page. Source Zion. Okay, this is a short comment that the Magen Avraham makes on the law that you violate Shabbos to save somebody. He says, "Va'ayin biyoredeya, sof siman kuf nun hei." He says, "See yoredeya," which deals with kashrus issues among other things. The deba'inon shetehei harefua yidua al pi mumcha, that we require that the cure be known, or that it be prescribed by an expert. He says, I got that from Yoredeya. Where in Yoredeya? Source Ches. Source Ches isn't about the laws of Shabbos, but look at what it is it's talking about. It's talking about eating something non-kosher in order to effect a cure. And he says, V'chol cholesh shema achivim lo isur. Anytime you're going to feed a prohibited food to a patient, tzrichim shetehei herfua yidua o'al pi mumcha. The cure has to be known, or it has to be prescribed by an expert. So that's the Rabbi Moshe Isserles. He's saying what the Magen Avraham was quoting for us. We don't permit a prohibited item, if you could do it permissibly, just like with the prohibited item. Even if it means there will be a little bit of a delay. As long as the delay will not endanger the patient, so you go with the mutter cure. That's not the key point for us. The key point is his opening comment, which is, you will only feed the patient a prohibited item if you know this is going to work, or it was prescribed by an expert. That's his statement. So that's where we get this idea of a known cure. The question remains, though, why? And what does the standard even mean? So now we can see page Taf Yud Gimel. Source number two. Rifu'ah yidua. Kasav ha-Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham wrote, we already saw it, Shemi Yoredeya ro'im, Shetzarach shetehei ha-Rifu'ah yidua o'al pimumcha. That from Yoredeya, what we saw in Source Ches, we see that the cure must be known or must be prescribed by an expert. The Chain Bahagos Maimoni Mefurash, and so is explained also in the comments of the Rambam. Hagos Maimoni commentary to the Rambam. Da'af Bechola Sheyesh Bo Sakana. How's that for an acronym? Da'af Bechola Sheyesh Bo Sakana Ba'inon Shetehei HaRefua Yidua. Even if the patient is dangerously ill, nonetheless, you can only use the cure if it is a known cure. Vikosev. The first Lubavitcher Rebbe, we mentioned Lubavitch before. So, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe in his Shulchan Aruch wrote, Umi kol makom, still, Afilu bivadai sakana ein mechalin ela berefua shehi yidua lakol. Even if the person is definitely in danger, you will only violate Shabbos for a cure that is known to all, or al pi mumcha, or via an expert, ukashi refua yidua, and it's a known cure. Af shein yadua im ze yisrape ba'ola. Even if I don't know whether to cure this person, but it's a known cure in general, Michal and Misafek will violate Shabbos when we are in doubt. So he's willing to cede that much ground. It doesn't have to be known for this person. It just has to be a known cure. But the question remains. Two questions. How do you define a known cure? And why am I requiring a known cure? Why don't I just say, if it looks good, go for it? You're trying to save a life here. So we're going to get three answers, although frankly I have a hard time distinguishing between two of them, as we'll see. So Ulam, he asks the question now, the bottom line in the column. Ulam, however, Hapri Megadim, classic commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, Mistapek Bazeh, the Pri Megadim was uncertain about this. Vikosev Shetzarech Iyun, he says this requires examination. Dibisafek nami, even if I'm not sure whether this is going to work, safek pikuach nefesh lahakel. When you're not sure about saving a life, you go leniently. Ubi yoredeya yesh lomar demari b'chol ashein bo sakana. So he says, you know what? Looking back at source chess for a second, did we define what type of a patient we were talking about when the Rambam made this statement? No. The answer is no. We did not define the type of patient we're talking about. It is entirely possible to argue that the patient that we're talking about in Source Ches is indeed Chola She'en Bo Sakana, somebody who is not dangerously ill. That's what we could contend. And that's indeed the argument that he makes. He says we're talking about someone who's not dangerously ill. That could be what we're talking about. Yeah, maybe you can share with us so that she'll see. He says, "Ubiyoredeya yesh lomar." You could say, "Demari becholah she'ein bo sakana." We're dealing with a patient who's not dangerously ill. The iser derabanan ein matirin besafek ki hagavna, because we're not going to permit a person to violate a rabbinic prohibition when in such a case of doubt, because the patient isn't dangerously ill. So the first answer is, we're talking about someone who's not in danger. Clear? Easy? Simple? But likely not correct. Why? Because you have to know the case that he was talking about. In other words, when the Shulchan Aruch made, or when the Rambam, I should say, in Source Ches, made his statement, it came with a parenthesis. Go back to Source Ches, please, on the sheet. Okay, Source Chet, the opening line there said, V'chol cholesh ma'achil lo yisur tzrichim shetei ha'refua yidua o api mumcha. That when we say we'll feed him the food, even though it's prohibited, nonetheless we'll do it, right? The source for it is in the parentheses. It's a sefer called Isur Ve'heter Ha'aroch. There were a number of sfarim called Isur Ve'heter written in the Middle Ages. This one I brought for you in Source Chet. And look at the case that he's quoting. Heshiv Maharam. The Isser V'Heter is quoting a responsum from a rabbi known as Maharam, and he had written, responded, Al Nichfe Echod Sheratza Knani L'Raposo Ulahachilo Sheretz Ha'of. What is the case of a Nichfe? Anybody know what Nichfe refers to? Nichfe is a person with seizures. It's often used today when we talk about someone who's epileptic, but it doesn't have to be. It's a person with seizures. So a person was prone to seizures, and a Kana'ani, meaning a non-Jew, wanted to give the following medication to him. It was Sheretz Ha'of. Sheretz Ha'of means a flying, creepy, crawly creature, some kind of locust, or something that wasn't kosher. That's what he wanted to feed the patient. He said, I know seizures, I know how to cure seizures, eat this locust. That's what he said then, so more or less. And the Yisr v'Heter writes, Nichfe, hu choli gadol. He says, seizures are a great illness. This is like an internal wound, which we consider to be of the highest danger. It could be very dangerous for the person. The person, when he has a seizure, could fall into fire, can fall into a river, whatever it is. And therefore he writes, he still says, you're only allowed to use the cure if it's a known cure. So you wanted to tell me that the requirement that it be a certified medication only applies if the person is not in danger. Right? That's what we wanted to offer as our answer. But the source case was the case of somebody who was in danger. So throw that answer out. That answer doesn't work. You follow? So now we need to come up with a better answer. Go back into page Tough Yud Gimel, please. We are on the fourth line in the left-hand column. Ulam, however, he writes, Doched dvarav hatehila ledavid. The tehila ledavid contradicts the answer of, well, it's only where he's not dangerously ill. Ki be'isser v'heter, because in the isser v'heter, which we just read, Heshiv maharam, Nichfe hu choli gadol ukamaka shachalal dami v'chule. He only gives you an excerpt, but you see, it's what we were talking about. That the case of Nichfe is indeed somebody who is gravely ill. And we view it as being like an internal wound. And he says that you can only do this if the cure is known. So therefore I need a different answer. Why is it that you're requiring it? If the person is known to be dangerously ill, you should be doing anything and everything at your disposal, even if it's not certified. The Kachkas of Ayam Shel Shlomo, so Perek Lutrefos, Veveyo Ataz, others ask the same question. Umetarez shama tehila ledavid. So the tehila ledavid offers the following answer: Sherefu'a yidua, haynu shenira larov bnei adam sheetzlo shoot sarich laosar refu'a. The answer is redefine a known cure. You want to know what a known cure is? A known cure means that most of the people standing there think that that's needed. They're not doctors, okay? We're not to all the doctors here, raise your hand. No, just kidding. But the doctors aren't present. All you have are people like me who know random collections of information from experiences that we've had and who don't know anything medically. So we can come up with the craziest, most bizarre ideas and have no clue what we're talking about. So he says, in that circumstance, that's when we say it has to be something that at least the majority of the people who are standing there can agree on. That's the idea. For all we know, we're hurting the patient. Avol b'misupakim, but if they're in doubt, lo, then you don't do it. Umashakasav haramava magin avram, o afilu mumche, haynu afshu misupak. And that explains the second clause. Go back to source Zion, please, on the side sheet. I apologize for having you jump back and forth, but we need to see the sources again. The magin avram's comment that started this whole mess, he said, what do we require? Ayin b'yaredeya sov simen kufnun hei. Dibba'inon, we require shetehea refu'a yidua. It has to be a known cure. Oh, al pi mumcha. Or via an expert. In other words, if I have an expert and the expert says, I think this is a good idea, then you do it. Whether he's 100% sure or not. If you don't have someone who knows what he's doing, then the substitute for that is the cure has to be something that the people who are on the scene generally have as a consensus, yeah, that's what you do for this illness. That's the threshold that you have to meet in order to violate Shabbos. Follow? Good? Clear? So that's the answer that the Tehila David is offering here. Either you need the cure to be known to the people who are there who are not doctors, or you need a doctor to recommend it. Now here, back on the Tough Yud Gimel sheet, he then quotes you another sefer, the Ateres Chachamim, with an answer that he believes is a different answer. but I'm not really clear on why this is different. I thought about emailing Rabbi Dr. Abraham to ask him for clarification on it, but because there's no practical application of this, I sort of, I don't want to waste his time by just asking him to clarify that. I don't, unfortunately, have the sefer that he's referring to look it up in the original. But this is what he says: Ulam hadas Torah mitareitz b'shem shut ateres chachamim. He says the Das Torah, which is another work, quotes the Ateres Chachamim, which is yet another work, Shetzarich Lomer, that you have to give the following answer. Disham, in the case over there, meaning the Nichfe case, the seizure case, Lo Nemra Harafua Ba'achilas Sheretz Mipi Rofe, Rak Me'akum Shelo Haya Rofe. The person who was recommending in the source that we saw in source tests, the person who was recommending it was just some guy. It wasn't a doctor. The Rak Me'akum Shelo Haya Rofe. He was not Jewish and he was not a doctor. Neither. 0 for 2. Al Kain, Lo Ratza Maharam Lahatir Al Smach Dvarav Rakim Yidua Refuah Zubiladav. So the Maharam said, I'm not going to permit this. Some quack comes in and says to me, oh, eat this. He's not a doctor. And the food he's recommending is treif. I'm not going to tell you to do that. You need some basis for this. V'das l'navon nekal shekol harefuos sheosin v'machalos asuros sheyesh aleihem kareis omisa l'chol sheyesh bo sakana v'chulei. He says the all therapies, all medicines that are done using prohibited foods, foods that are prohibited with a potential punishment of karet or of death, v'av k'sheyesh rak safek sakana v'gam safek berefuah, even if you're not sure of the danger, and even if you're not sure it's going to work, mikomakom mutar, it is still permitted, digadol koach hatzalas nefesh miYisrael, because saving a life is so important that it will override it. So his answer seems to be fundamentally the same answer as the Tehillah of David, which is to say that either you need a doctor saying this makes sense, or you need to know what you're talking about. Maybe the only difference is that the Ateres Chachamim, as quoted here, did not mention the case of the layman. Right? The case, in other words, he said that the case where they recommended this grasshopper, this locust, was recommended by a layman, and therefore he said, don't use it. He did not allow for, maybe this is the difference, it could be the third answer, does not allow for a layman who's really sure. Right? Again, are we clear here? Allow for the case of a layman who actually says, I know this is what you're supposed to do. We said, within the second answer, we said that if the bunch of people who are standing there are not doctors, but they generally agree that this is what you do, then we're going to accept it. He didn't say that in the third answer, in the Das Torah's answer. The Das Torah, according to the Ateres Chachamim, only said, if there's a doctor, good. If there's no doctor, no good. So maybe that's the distinction between the two, in which case, he isn't distinguishing between Yidua and Mumcheh. Yidua has to be Yidua by the expert. It's really one and the same. It has to be a known thing for the experts. Maybe that's the distinction between the two.
Not all doctors are moving.
So that's a good point. The general assumption that we make, certainly in the age of specialization, is that you won't be called mumcha unless you're mumcha for this particular issue. So yes, not every doctor will qualify. Far be it from me, but medical school training will only take you so far. So the fact they have general training and did a rotation in a particular field doesn't mean that they're an expert in that field. I would agree with that. On the other hand, and this is something that we've discussed earlier on, realistically, we're going to work with the knowledge that we have. So if, let's say, somebody collapses and I have a radiologist on the scene instead of a cardiologist on the scene, radiologist is going to take charge of what's going on as opposed to, say, me. If he feels like he's really unqualified, he has to say so. But realistically...
Then you're going to take over?
Yeah, exactly. Then I'm going to daven really hard. In other words, the fact that you're not certified by the board to handle a particular problem doesn't mean that you're not qualified enough to say, oh, this is what we should be doing. In the same way that somebody who let his CPR training lapse but fundamentally knows CPR, it just happens to be he hasn't retrained in a while, is better than nothing for someone if someone's going to administer CPR. Well, take the guy who, maybe it's true, hasn't had a refresher course in 10 years. And hope nothing goes wrong. I think that you do realistically enter a gray area when it comes to defining mumcha, which I assume is your essential point here. Yeah, I would agree with that. So it depends on which of these views you take. If you take the view of Tehillah LeDavid, assuming there's no conflict between them, I would take either the Mumcha or the Yidua, whichever one is available. According to the third approach here, from the Ataras Chachamim, I think he's saying there's no such thing as Yidua that is not from the Mumcha. You only have the Mumcha to rely on. I think that's where he's going. The Nishmas Avram is going to now add a keynote regarding the Mumcha. He says, at the bottom of the page of Taf Yud Gimel, V'ashmirat Shabbat Kilchata Mosif, right, Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth adds, Shegam mutar lerofei laroch nisuyim letzarech hatipul b'chol eshiyesh bo sakana. V'gam im toalatam shal nisyanot eile mutalat b'safek legabe chol ezeh. He says, a doctor is allowed to experiment in trying to treat the dangerously ill patient, even if he doesn't know that it's going to work for him. Even if that means violating Shabbat, nonetheless, that's what you do. So in other words, it's Shabbos. The patient comes in, whatever chemo they've been on or whatever treatment they've been on hasn't been working, and they now need to try a new course, and they have no idea whether it's going to work. You start today. You don't say, well, it's Shabbos now and I'm not sure. You go ahead with it. So he's willing to rely on the mumche to make the statement, even where it's not yidua. Re'ei gam le'el simin shin aleph, where he says, I had a separate discussion. Masha kasavti legabei trufot homeopathiot. He says, I discussed homeopathy earlier on. I'm not going to go into that here, which is good. And then he concludes, ulegabei tipulim seguliyim shakruchim b'chilul shabbat segula. We have something that has no natural explanation whatsoever. An amulet. So as far as writing an amulet on Shabbos, or let's say they want to violate Shabbos by sending somebody to drive to the rabbi to let him know he should daven for somebody. So that, he's not making that case up. That case actually happened. There's a particular case in the literature regarding this issue of violating Shabbos by going to someone to go daven for somebody, and then there's another case of writing an amulet on Shabbos for somebody. And so he says, sorry? That's exactly the question. That's precisely the question. And so he says, I already discussed that earlier, so I'm not going to discuss it here. That's what he says. But there is, if you want, I can send you stuff on it. I gave a shiur on this topic at one point. It's probably on YU Torah, on alternative medicines, and that comes up as part of the conversation there. But okay, but that sums up what we wanted to accomplish. So we reached hit 2 points today. Number one, that there's a difference between taking medicine that one chooses to take in order to save oneself from illness, even if it's a deathly illness, and saving oneself from an attacker. It's largely an academic discussion because I don't know of any doctors that prescribe that you should take, you know, a relic from an idol as part of your medical therapy in order to cure yourself. But it's a fascinating discussion because it brings in issues of intent. Two people are doing fundamentally the same thing but with different ideas in mind and different halakhic conclusions. Right? The person who's doing it because he wants to cure his illness is wrong. The person who's doing it because someone has a gun to his head is not.
But that goes across the board in halakha. I mean, that's like with Esther and Lilith.
Yes.
All sorts of things go
right
back to that.
Right. And as we said when I introduced it, when we first started talking about that topic, it's sort of a double effect type of a philosophical issue. The second piece here that we see is that there's a lot of debate regarding breaking Shabbos for a medicine or a therapy which is uncertain, and it depends which of the three approaches you take. Discarding the first approach of the Prima Gadim because of the challenge to him that the source for permitting this was the seizure case, or the source for prohibiting it, I should say, was the seizure case. Working with the second and third answers, the second answer is going to be that you take a medicine that's recommended by non-doctors if that's what they think you should be doing, or you take a medicine that is actually recommended by a doctor. The third approach seems to be you would take the medicine recommended specifically by the doctor. You wouldn't go with an amateur to tell you what you should do. The preference is specifically to get something recommended by a physician. So if there's no physician around, that's when you get into really difficult territory. Now, keep in mind that our circumstances are somewhat changed from the circumstances of even 100 years ago, in the sense that much of our medical information is coming from physicians. So in other words, I know that I've taken my kids to the doctor any number of times for strep throat, or to be honest, my wife has taken the kids to the doctor any number of times for strep throat, and the answer was penicillin. Does that make me a doctor? For sure not. But on the other hand, with no other information at my disposal, assuming again I'm sure there's no allergic reaction that I'm now endangering the patient with more, it's reasonable for me to say this is not just what I think, it's what the doctor says. My information is doctor-based. So that changes the equation a little bit in terms of how we're going to look at this. I think that's a key point to consider. But fundamentally, the wording of the Magen Avraham is very clear. He says, Yidua or Mumcha. Not Yidua and Mumcha. And I think that does weight things a little bit on the side of the second approach. I think there's something to be said for that. As I always say when I give a class on a halachic matter, ask your rabbi. This is the shul rabbi's job to paskin on, to give a ruling on, and we're just learning. But next week, God willing, I am going to be speaking in Ottawa at this time, so I will not be here. The week after that is already Pesach. The week after that is still Pesach. So at this point, we resume however many weeks that is from tonight. I think it's April 28th. And God willing, we'll pick up then. Thank you.